Matthew 17, 14 through 21. And when they came to the crowd, a man came up to him, and kneeling before him, said, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he has seizures and he suffers terribly, for often he falls into the fire and often into the water. And I brought him to your disciples, and they could not heal him." And Jesus answered, "O faithless and twisted generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me." And Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him, and the boy was healed instantly. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, "Why could we not cast it out?" He said to them, "Because of your little faith. For truly, I say to you, if you have faith like a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you."
Thanks, Terry. Vacation Bible School is about 3 weeks away, and if you've not signed up to help, please do. You can sign up on our website at springroadcoc.com, or you can see Lauren Honecker or Caleb. If you don't know who Lauren is, Lauren, are you in here this morning? Okay, I won't ask you to stand. I'm going to ask Dan if he would stand. And Lauren is sitting right beside Dan. So see Lauren if you could help, or see Caleb. Caleb, would you stand? Thank you. Okay, so, you know, VBS is a church-wide evangelistic effort. And for this effort to be successful, we need lots of help. So unlike previous years, you know, where we held VBS for three or four evenings in a row, this year it is just one day. And that day is Saturday, June 29th, from 9:30 in the morning till 3:30 in the afternoon. So signing up to help will not impact your normal weekly routine. So I want to use this time today to present an introduction on the theme for Vacation Bible School, which is, as you see up on the screen, Club Hero. And so the children will be learning about the lives of four Bible heroes: Elijah, Daniel, Esther, and Gideon. And in the dictionary, there are several definitions of the word hero. Number one, a legendary or mythological figure, often of divine descent, endowed with great strength or ability. Number two, an illustrious warrior. And number three, a person admired for achievements and noble qualities, or one who shows great courage. So these Bible heroes that I'm going to briefly share with you this morning demonstrated great courage. And one of the four was endowed with great ability. But I would argue that it really wasn't courage or great ability that turned these people into heroes. You know, I believe there's another trait that these four biblical characters shared that is what turned them into heroes. Elijah was a prophet of God who lived in the first half of the 9th century BC, and he prophesied during the reign of Ahab, king of Israel. And one of the more noteworthy accomplishments of Elijah was the time he challenged the prophets of the god Baal to a duel of gods in 1 Kings 18 to prove that Jehovah God was the one true God. King Ahab and his wife Jezebel had led Israel into worshiping the god Baal, and Jezebel had put many of the Lord's prophets to death. So Elijah challenged Ahab and all the prophets of Baal to a contest. And in 1 Kings 18, in verse 19, Elijah said, "Now tell all Israel to meet me at Mount Carmel. Also bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." So Ahab called all 850 prophets together, along with the people of Israel. And in verse 22 of 1 Kings 18, Elijah said, you know, I am the only prophet of God here. But there are 450 prophets of Baal. So Elijah was outnumbered here, 450 to 1. And technically 850 to 1 because the 400 prophets of Asherah were there. So Elijah instructed the prophets of Baal to prepare a bull for a sacrifice to Baal, but not to start the fire for the sacrifice. And he, Elijah, would prepare a bull for the sacrifice to God. And the God who answers by fire is the true God. So the prophets of Baal prepared their sacrifice, and then Elijah told them to pray to their God to consume the sacrifice. So they began lifting up prayers to Baal. And it indicates in verse 26 that they prayed to Baal from morning until noon, shouting, Baal, answer us! But there was no sound, and no one answered. They danced around the altar that they had built. And at noon, Elijah began to kind of make fun of them a little bit. He said, pray louder. If Baal really is God, maybe he's, you know, maybe he's thinking. Or he's busy, or he's traveling. Maybe he's sleeping, so you'll have to wake him up. The prophets prayed louder, cutting themselves with swords and spears until their blood flowed, which was kind of the way they worshiped. The afternoon passed, and the prophets continued to act like this until it was time for the evening sacrifice, but no voice was heard. Baal did not answer. It says no one paid attention. So Elijah then said, come here. He built the altar of God that had been torn down, placed the wood on the altar, cut the animal in pieces, placed the meat on the wood. He then poured four large jars of water on top of the meat and wood just to make it harder for the sacrifice to burn, because Elijah wanted to leave no doubt. And then Elijah went near the altar and he prayed, Lord, you are the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. Prove that you are the God of Israel and that I am your servant. Show these people that you commanded me to do all these things. Lord, answer my prayer so these people will know that you, Lord, are God and that you will change their minds. And so, according to verse 38, immediately, fire from the Lord came down and burned the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, burned the ground around the altar. It also dried up all the water in the ditch that filled around the altar. And when all the people saw this, they fell down to the ground crying, the Lord is God, the Lord is God. So Elijah proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Lord was the one true God. You know, the odds were stacked against him. 450 prophets to one. Really, 850 prophets to one. Thousands that day, thousands of prayers went up to Baal. Only one prayer to God. You know, that's what heroes do. They conquer impossible odds. You know, they show great courage and they become and overcome tremendous obstacles. And I would argue, however, that conquering impossible odds and showing great courage is not what made Elijah a hero in this instance. There was something else that made him a hero. Daniel is another Bible hero. We've been studying him for the last few weeks. He survived being tossed into a den of lions. And you would think that someone who was thrown into a den of lions had committed some horrible crime. But he wasn't tossed into the den of lions because he was a criminal. He was tossed into the den of lions because he was so exceptional at his job. And in his personal life, that made his colleagues look bad, and they were threatened by that. Now, that'll never happen to me. But anyway, what brought this about was the Babylonian king, Darius, decided to appoint 120 governors to rule over the kingdom. And then he appointed three supervisors to kind of keep tabs on those governors. And it actually says in Daniel's letter, his book, that the governors, those three governors or those three supervisors were there to make sure the governors didn't cheat the king. So Daniel was chosen to be one of the three supervisors. And it indicates in Daniel 6, verse 3 and 4, he showed that he could do the work better than the other supervisors or governors. And so the king planned to put Daniel in charge of the whole kingdom. And in verse 4, it indicates that because of this, the other supervisors and governors tried to find reasons to accuse Daniel about his work in the government. I mean, they were jealous. But according to chapter 6, verse 4 and 5, they could not find anything wrong with him or any reason to accuse him because he was trustworthy and not lazy or dishonest. Finally, verse 5, these men said, "We'll never find any reason to accuse Daniel unless it is about the law of his God." I mean, Daniel was a man of such integrity that they could not find any faults in his life or in his work. So the supervisors and governors got together and concocted a plan to snare Daniel through his religious practices. They were aware that Daniel prayed three times a day because he would open his windows toward Jerusalem and apparently pray out loud. So they went to the king, and they snookered him into writing a law that said no one can pray to anyone except the king for 30 days. And it indicates in Daniel 6, verse 10, that even though Daniel knew this law had been written, he didn't back down. He continued to go to his upstairs room in his house three times each day, opened the windows toward Jerusalem, and knelt down to pray and thank God, just as he always did. So Daniel, instead of keeping his windows closed and praying silently, which is probably what I would have done, he continued to do what he had always done. He did not try to hide his religious faith or devotion. His jealous colleagues kind of spied on him, and then like little children, they went and told the king, you know. So Daniel ended up being thrown into a den of lions, but the Lord intervened, closed the mouth of the lions, and therefore Daniel was saved. When you think about that, I mean, that took tremendous courage on Daniel's part. I mean, that's the stuff that heroes are made of. You know, he refused to be intimidated by the threat of being devoured by lions. He knew his colleagues were out to get him. He refused to compromise and fearlessly continued to pray to his God, trust in his God, and was willing to accept whatever the consequences might be. But again, I would argue that what made Daniel a hero was really not his courage, nor his refusal to compromise. It was something else. Esther's the name of a young Jewish girl who became a queen. The story begins with Queen Vashti and her refusal to comply with King Xerxes' wishes in the Persian kingdom, and so she was deposed as queen. King's staff organized a kingdom-wide search for a successor to Queen Vashti, and Esther was chosen to be one of the candidates to replace her. Esther's parents died when she was really young, and she was adopted by her cousin Mordecai. And because Queen Esther was a Jewish exile, Mordecai cautioned her not to share her ethnicity with anyone during the selection process. Esther was, as you know, if you have read Esther, was eventually judged to be the most beautiful and was chosen to be the new queen. And the story behind Esther is a little bit similar to Daniel in that King Xerxes promoted an official in the kingdom named Haman and ordered everyone to bow down to Haman. And Mordecai, Esther's cousin, refused to bow down because he was a Jew. He was devoted to God, and under the law, you know, it was sinful to worship anyone or anything other than God. Well, Haman didn't much like the fact that Mordecai would not bow down to him, and he decided to get rid of Mordecai by getting rid of all of Mordecai's people, which were the Jews. So Haman persuaded the king to institute a law that all of the Jews in the kingdom were to be attacked and destroyed on a particular day. So when Mordecai learned of this, you know, he said to Esther, "You got to go to the king and you got to beg for mercy." The problem was, no one could see or talk to the king without being invited. Now, there was one exception. If you approached the king without being invited, and the king held out his golden scepter, that person's life would be spared. But, you know, there was no guarantee that he would hold out his golden scepter. So I guess it depended on what mood the king was in on that particular day. So Esther explained this to Mordecai, and Mordecai sent word back to her, "Don't think that your life is going to be spared just because you're a queen." So Esther agreed to risk her life in order to save her people. She requested that all of the Jews get together and pray and fast for her for 3 days. And she would then approach the king, even though it was against the law. And her words in chapter 4, verse 16 were, "If I die, I die." Now, can you imagine just being placed in that position? I mean, just imagine that kind of weight being placed on the life, on your life, or the life of a young person. I mean, the survival of all the Jews, all of her people, depended on her. Well, Esther courageously agreed to put her life on the line and approach the king, and fortunately for her, when she did, he held out his gold scepter, and she then invited him to a feast and eventually disclosed to him this plot to destroy her people, and she ended up being a heroine because of her courage that saved the Jewish people. So that's what heroes and heroines do, right? They save people, they save cities, they save planets, they save lives. You know, she had no magical powers. You know, she simply asked for prayer and then summoned up the courage to go to the king with her life on the line. So this was a young lady who showed great courage, and her name has gone down in history as one of the greatest heroines of all time. But was it only courage that made her a heroine? The last hero we'll look at is Gideon in Judges 6 and 7. Israel was being subjected to the rule of the Midianites when an angel of the Lord visited Gideon while he was threshing wheat. And the angel said to Gideon, Judges 6, verse 12, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." And Gideon's response was, "Pardon me, but if the Lord is with us, why are we having so much trouble?" So Gideon, you know, then complained, you know, how God hadn't, you know, he hadn't done any of the miracles today like he had done in the past, and that God had handed them over to the Midianites. And the angel then said to him in Judges 6, verse 14, "Go with your strength and save Israel from the Midianites. I am the one who is sending you." And Gideon's response was, "Pardon me, my Lord, but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh. I'm the least in my family." And, you know, I can kind of sympathize with Gideon's response. You know, how am I going to do that? And I'm sure many of you have been placed in, you know, in a situation where you were asked to do something that you had never done before and weren't really sure you were up to the task. I'll just share one incident that I experienced back in 1988. I was working for URS Dalton in downtown Columbus, and I was one of the architects on a project, but my responsibility was basically coordinating the production of the construction documents, or as some people call them, blueprints. In our firm, we had one main designer, His name was Farouk Hassan. He was from Egypt. He was a very talented designer, but he wasn't always easy to work with because it was oftentimes either his way or no way. So we were working with a client from Cincinnati, and the client became a little frustrated with Farouk, so they came to me because I was one of the architects on the project and said, you're going to go to Cincinnati and meet with the client to work on the design because he doesn't want to work with Farouk anymore. And I'm thinking, me? You know, you want me to be the designer? I hadn't done any design for the firm in 5 years. I mean, if Farouk can't satisfy him, how am I going to be able to satisfy him? So I was very, very hesitant to say yes, and I wasn't even asked to save a nation. You know, I was just being asked to go do some drawings. So I can understand Gideon's reaction. But the angel of the Lord then said to Gideon in Judges 6, verse 16, I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive. So Gideon was a reluctant judge and military leader, but eventually accepted that role and was very successful. In fact, Gideon defeated the Midianites even though he was ridiculously outnumbered. If you're familiar with it, in Judges 7:2, the Lord told Gideon that he had too many men. His army was too big to defeat the Midianites. And so in Judges 7 and verse 12, it says, the Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the peoples from the east were camped in that valley. There were so many of them, they seemed like locusts. Their camels could not be counted because they were as many as the grains of the sand on the seashore. I mean, so that sounds like thousands and thousands. And Gideon had only, at this time, 32,000 men. But God said, no, that's too many. Because he didn't want Israel thinking that they won the battle when God gives them the victory. So the Lord told Gideon to tell the people that if anyone's afraid, you can go home. Okay, 22,000 men went home. So Gideon is now down to 10,000 men. God told him, you still have too many. So he ended up with 300 men. Okay, so think about that just for a second. You know, there may be like, I don't know, 140 to 150 of us in here right now. You double that, we'd fill this auditorium. So that's the size of the army that Gideon had to go against this army that was so large it couldn't be counted. Now, if you think that's crazy, these 300 men didn't even have any weapons. I mean, this sounds like something you'd read in a comic book. You know, but this is real. All they had was a trumpet in one hand and a torch and a glass jar in the other. It indicates that when the Midianites heard the trumpets blowing and the glass jars breaking, they thought there was a huge army coming after them. They became confused. They started fleeing and killing each other. It indicates in Judges 7:22 that the Lord made all the Midianites fight each other. So as a result of Gideon's willingness to be used by God, the Lord rescued Israel and gave them a huge victory on that day. So when you consider these four individuals, Elijah, Daniel, Esther, and Gideon, through their courage and their willingness to be used by God, the Lord was able to accomplish His will in very powerful ways. Courage and a willingness to be used by God or to do God's will seems to be the common trait in these Bible heroes. But again, I would suggest to you that what made them heroes was not so much their courage. I would suggest that what made them heroes was their faith in God that inspired them to perform such courageous acts. You know, does it not take incredible faith to fight an army so large it can't be counted with 300 men who have no weapons? I mean, no matter how much courage you have, you know that's impossible unless God is involved. The chapter in the New Testament that kind of confirms that is in Hebrews 11. It's kind of like a hall of faith. You know, the author lists these great people who perform great acts because of their faith. It doesn't talk about courage. It just talks about faith. Through faith, Abraham did this. Through faith, Isaac did this. Through faith, Joseph did this. Through faith, Rahab. And Gideon's even in that list. And so what that means for us is that through your faith, you can be a member of this club. You too can be a spiritual hero. You might think, well, I don't have the courage to do that, but it's actually faith in God that produces the courage to do God's will. And you don't have to do great feats like that. Just show that faith every day, where you are and in what you're doing every day. Demonstrate that faith. And just to be clear, you know, I'm not talking about courage in general, because I don't have the courage to go bungee jumping or skydiving or anything crazy like that. I don't have the courage to do that. But when it comes to doing the will of God, your faith can produce a courage that could accomplish great feats, not only for God, but with the help of God. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 17, verse 20. He said, if you have faith like a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. My question to you is, do you have enough faith to believe that? Elijah, Daniel, Esther, and Gideon had mustard seed type faith, and because of that, they became biblical heroes. So I encourage you to join the club. And all you need to qualify is the faith, the size of a grain of mustard seed. And if you have faith like the grain of a mustard seed, the Lord can do the impossible through you. Because faith produces courage. Even Jesus said in John 14, 12, truly, truly, I say to you, whoever believes in me will also do the works that I do. And greater works than these will he do, because I'm going to the Father. So this morning I encourage you to put your faith in Jesus if you have not yet done so. And if you have, I don't know what's going on in your life, but if you're facing impossible odds, if expectations have been placed on you that you're not sure you can deal with, I suggest you just submit and humble yourself before God this morning. If God can create the universe, if God can raise Jesus from the dead, if God can defeat an army so large it can't be counted with 300 men who have no weapons, he can take care of whatever problem is going on in your life. Piece of cake. So this morning, if you need to submit to him this morning, he's waiting for you. He's waiting for you to put your faith in him. He's waiting for you to give him a chance in your life. We encourage you to respond this morning. You can come to the front, you can go to the back. Either way, we encourage you to respond to Jesus this morning as we stand and as we sing.